You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to the cycling podcast Femina. My name is Rose Manley, and well, the sun is shining in this particular corner of Tooting right now, which means only one thing, and that is that proper, not to give any disrespect to the Vuelta, but proper Grand Tour, big mountain racing must be on its way. Now, of course, no sun shines brighter than my lovely co-hosts. And this month, Denny always complains about not getting a good intro. So that one, you must be, Denny Gray, you must be happy with that one. Come on.
Oh, I mean, things have turned around enormously. I'm very happy with that. And I love the way you kind of captured both of us in that lovely intro there as well. It's very deftly done.
Well, the Orla Shenoui also joining us back again. Orla, so glad to have you back. It was more aimed at Orla, and I was thinking, should I then turn to like the storm clouds are coming for Denny Gray? But I didn't. I combined both of you.
Rose,
You didn't, but well done in engineering the insult in anyway, Rose. That's like commendable.
I don't want everyone to think that I'm off my game. I don't want anyone to think that I came in not prepared with an insult if it suddenly took my fancy. But Orla, yeah, we haven't seen you for a few months. We've seen you on the television, but we haven't spoken to you here on the podcast for a few months. And in fact, I looked it up. It was even before that amazing win by Kasia Niewiadoma. At a Flèche Wallonne, when we had been saying it was.
No, was it?
It was just before that.
Hang on a minute. I just realised, is that why I haven't been asked back on the pod since? Because I was right. Because I swore she would win one of the Ardennes, and she did. And you thought, if we leave up for
do you know what it was? Because I have given you total bragging rights there, haven't I? But what it was is that we didn't think you would emotionally kind of pulled yourself together enough after that. We presumed that you were still flat on the studio floor somewhere, weeping with joy for Kasia Niewiadoma winning. Unfortunately, of course, I should actually tell you what's going on the show before I just plow on talking about racing. And that is that we're going to be talking a bit about the Tour de Suisse and kind of looking ahead what that could mean for the Tour de France fam, which is obviously the big, big race. That's actually coming up pretty quick, isn't it now? I've also got a feature this month from the Tour of Britain Women, where I've got some riders to keep some audio diaries. Some very diverse riders, really, in terms of kind of what they were looking to achieve, you know, what their motivations were, you know, what their kind of preparations were. And that was Lucy Harris of the Pro Noctis 200 Degree Hargreaves Contracting Team. Denny, that's got to be the longest name in. Denny's giving me a thumbs up, everybody, because that's got to be the longest name in continental team history. That's a huge one.
It's a very, very long name. Yeah. And they always have a very long name. They always have these kind of three sponsor titles every year, which is always a mouthful and also a real pain to type out, which I have to constantly do as covering the British scene. So, but anyway, it's good. It's great that they've got so many companies supporting them.
Yeah.
It's a good way of looking at it.
That's true. And giving all of those sponsors, their airtime. They get a lot of airtime just because they've got so many names. Christine Majerus, of course, of SD Works. Pfeiffer Georgie, who is, well, I was going to say the British champion, but depending when you listen to this, or maybe she'll win it again. Mm. We don't know whether she still is. Of DSM Firmenich and Ailey Shaw, who was the youngest rider at the Tour of Britain Women. So that's going to come up later on. Plus, we're going to be looking ahead to the Giro d'Italia Women, as it's known now, which is coming up in the next few weeks. Let's start by talking about the Tour de Suisse and Orla, because we haven't had you on for a few months. We were probably actually speaking to you about SD Works. They haven't really got it right during the classic season, and Vollering looks off her game. We haven't got to hear from you since about, you know, what a turnaround she's had. And she's just been remarkably dominant again at Tour de Suisse, winning that by 1:28 from Neve Bradbury.
I mean, bike racing makes fools of all of us, doesn't it? It's why this podcast is a bit pointless. And all of the podcasts and all of the publications and all of the broadcasts.
Say that.
Because we can speak with authority on everything. And then the bike racing comes along and just rips our rule book to shreds. Having said that, it's not that SD Works have necessarily turned things around. They've just gone back to full form, haven't they? They've done what we expected them to do all season anyway. They just took a little bit longer in the run-up to it. But Demi Vollering has been absolutely outstanding. And I think what is impressive about her performance as much as anything is the fact that it is now known that she is leaving the team. And we often see riders, even team leaders, somewhat sidelined by a team as they are on their way out. The fact that she can take the Tour de Suisse by such a margin, 3 wins out of 4 as well, I guess, is that because of the team support, or is Demi just a class above right now? A bit of both, maybe, but so impressive. And, you know, I'm glad to see her delivering on what we know she is capable of. And I know that there is an argument that it can get a little bit samey, but I don't like to see champions struggling for whatever reason. You want to see them firing at their best so that you know exactly where everyone else is as well, and everyone knows what bar they have to reach. And Demi is setting that bar. She's been absolutely phenomenal. I know we'll get to it, but are we all secretly, though, even though I said all of that, are we all secretly kind of glad she's not doing the Giro? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much. That's exactly why I was thinking that the Giro is going to be probably a bit of a more interesting smash fest than the Tour de France fan might be. But I don't know. I mean, where do you stand, Denny, on that? You know, how much was it Vollering strength and how much of it was kind of a team performance at the Tour de Suisse? I wouldn't have said that she had necessarily the best team at the Tour de Suisse to support her. So I kind of thought it was quite a good indicator for next year when we, you know, they did used to say that she was going to be going to, in some, you know, million euro deal to UAE. It's now...
The latest has been FDJ, but it's not confirmed yet as per time of broadcasting, is it?
No, so now they're saying FDJ Suez, she might go there. But, you know, she's going to end up, whatever, at a team that is effectively smaller than the SD Works juggernaut, isn't it? And so I kind of felt like at the Tour de Suisse, we were seeing how she would work, how she would still win, even when she doesn't have a team with loads of climbing prowess supporting her and getting her into those winning positions.
Yeah, I mean, she did remarkably well. I think we talked about this a little bit in the last episode. I mean, she has operated to some extent with a slightly subpar SD Works team in the last few races. And I say that, I guess, in inverted commas, because a subpar SD Works team is still an incredibly strong team, of course. But obviously, Marlon Reusser and other riders have been off their game and they've had some injury issues. But I think Misha Vredeveld really rescued the race for her, but she was very, very important at the Tour de Suisse, particularly on stage 4, and keeping things together when it was quite a crazy staging, I guess, could have potentially run away from her. So I mean, but on your point about whether this gives us a clue about next year, I mean, I just listened to or read a piece in L'Equipe with the French manager of FDJ Suez, who says that they have plans to expand from next year. Their budget's going to be increased by 20%. They've already got some really good climbers at Evita Music, for example, we've talked about last month. So the team, wherever she goes, it might not be a weaker team anyway. Clearly, she'll need some support on the flatter stages, but it looks like she'll have support in the mountains if that's where she goes.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Evita Music because she obviously signed a much longer contract at FDJ. That's her team currently as well. But we were kind of touting her as possibly one of the few rivals to Demi Vollering, weren't we, in the last episode? And I think it's testament to even more about how consistent Demi Vollering is, the fact that she's gone through all of this Spanish block of racing and then she's done the Tour de Suisse and she's kind of done all of it being totally dominant when we've seen, you know, Evita Music looked really promising early on and admittedly, you know, she still finished 10th on GC at Tour de Suisse, but perhaps went off the boil slightly, you know, didn't look like she was contending for the win in Switzerland. And then you see the emergence of someone like Neve Bradbury from Canyon SRAM That was a great 1-2 for Canyon SRAM, wasn't it, Orla, on the third stage. Kasia Nevia-Doma graciously giving Neve Bradbury the win there, also to propel Neve Bradbury up in the overall rankings. I'm sure you were hoping for another Kasia Nevia-Doma win, though, Orla. You're like, come on, out sprinter at the end. Come on.
No, this is why a win like Flèche Wallonne is so important as well, because Kasia Nevia-Doma no longer needs an inverted commas that win at the Tour de Suisse. And I know there will always be controversy over whether or not a rider like Kasia should ever be allowing a teammate to take the win alongside her. But I love that. And I love that about professional racing, and that it's so specific and it's a very unique trait to bike racing. And I think it's a wonderful move, actually, by Kasia. Obviously, Neve did the hard work. You know, she was there. She was able to take advantage of that. But it says an awful lot, I think, as well, about the team, about Canyon SRAM, the fact they could take that 1-2, the fact they did so well overall at the Tour de Suisse. I think they have a lot of promise that we've talked about anyway. But, I mean, Neve herself has just had a phenomenal year, hasn't she? Such a breakthrough for her. When you look at her results, I've got them in front of me. That stage, obviously, second overall at the Tour de Suisse, second at the UAE Tour, third at the Sandoz Women's Tour Down Under way back at the start of the season, second in a stage at the UAE Tour as well. And I feel like it's fitting, really, that Kasia did that for Neve, and that we're able to speak about Neve in her own right. Because when you're on a team with someone like Kasia Nevia-Doma, who garners all the headlines for all the reasons, you know, not just because of the way she rides, but the way she nearly wins so often, I think it's hard for anyone else to punch through. It's much better for the team that they have two potential GC riders, isn't it? It's much better for Kasia that she has someone else that she can support, and all the weight and the pressure isn't on her shoulders. But I would say at this stage of the season, I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? Because Neve has finished second in our most recent stage race, but she's looking like the most promising talent, I would say, away from the SD Works and the Demi Vollering tree, is she?
Yeah, I actually gave a few months ago, I gave Denny the chance to big up Neve Bradbury, because before we started recording, he was kind of bigging her up and talking all about her, and he had like a big list of notes. And then I said to Denny, you know, oh, and there's, you know, Neve Bradbury. And then he just didn't take the, you didn't take the bait, did you, Denny? You just ignored that completely. So I'm going to give you your arena now to talk about Neve Bradbury. You're probably like, I don't have the notes anymore. But
well, I was just leaving it all to Orla. I knew it would come up later in the season and we'd have enough opportunity.
You're so gracious, Danny. Thank you.
That's right. That's right. So talking of gifts, of course, to your teammates. But
yeah, are you the Kasia to my Neve? Is that what we're doing here? I like it. I'll be the young up and coming star. It's been a while since I can lay claim to anything like that.
Yeah, I'm learning from Rose about backhanded insults.
I'm glad I've taught you something. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible performance, wasn't it, from Neve Bradbury? And it was really exciting to watch. I think she rode with incredible maturity at that race as well. And I think that bodes really well for Canyon SRAM. I know we've talked a lot about them and a lot of their younger riders, not just Bradbury, but Ricarda Bauernfeind and Niedermeyer and so on, and Zoe Backstead, and what a force they could be in the future in grand tours and stage racing. So I think that bodes really well. And I know we're going to talk about the Giro later, but I think that bodes well for the Giro as well, the way those two race together. And the strength of both Canyon SRAM and Lidl Trek at the race. You talked about the fact that SD Works perhaps didn't look at their strongest despite Vollering's dominance. Both of those teams had numbers yet again up there without kind of pulling off the biggest win, the overall win. So I think that bodes really well for a race like the Giro where we won't see Demi Vollering. Can I also say that Kim Kadzo looked very, very impressive. She's had an incredible season. Ever since you interviewed her, Rose,
I didn't interview her, Denny. It was that she got mentioned when I did the New Zealand special. She got mentioned by the manager of the Black Magic women team, Patrick Harvey. He mentioned that she came through his ranks light bulb moment, seeing, you know, that European racing existed and that you could be a bike racer and you could make it a career. And obviously she just kind of, continues to give everyone else light bulb moments, doesn't she? Because she just continues to sort of really shine on terrain you don't expect her to be shining on.
Sorry for misremembering that, but she really does have the makings of a kind of leading GC rider. I think she's only 22 and she finished 10th in the Vuelta. She had a crash in the final stage, didn't she, at the Tour de Suisse, which meant she slipped to 8th overall, but she would have had a better result. And because she's not only a good climber, she's also a good time trialist. She's the New Zealand time trial champion. She seems to be potentially the real kind of deal in stage racing, because she can climb, she can TT, and she's got so much potential left. And she's just extended with EF for another 2 years. So that, I say, bodes really well. I've said that so many times in this podcast already, but that looks, I think that's great for EF as well, who obviously have ambitions to become a world tour team in the future.
I think it's also good for her to be with a team like that, where they, I mean, because one of the things I did wonder watching the Tour de Suisse is, you know, Canyon-SRAM seem really strong, but they have kind of almost multiple leaders. And it's sort of the same with Little Trek a bit, when they have Guy Raylini and Elisa Longo-Borghini. You know, it seems that Guy Raylini is stronger on the really long climbs, the more kind of pure climbing stages, but then kind of loses a bit in sort of not being quite so good at positioning perhaps, and not being so confident on the descents. Obviously, because of her stature also, it's going to be harder to be as fast as some of the other riders in that. So I did wonder if, you know, Kim Kadzow actually has a great advantage as being kind of an out-and-out leader really in that team, that in a way Little Trek might trip up, because if they have these two great talents, both of them you'd think could win, you know, the Giro or the Tour. But to win the Giro or the Tour, you have to be a total all-rounder, don't you? You have to be able to do well in the time trials and on the big long descents and on the big long climbs.
I think that, I mean, I might end up eating my words here, but if we're looking at this season and talking about this season in particular, Kim Kadzow's potential has been sparkling. It's really shone through. However, I would still say you're probably looking at the likes of a Canyon-SRAM or a Little Trek to take on SD Works because of that breadth of experience that they have. So Gaia Raiolini may have her individual talents, and as you say, she may struggle with positioning, she may just struggle on descending, but she has an Elisa Longo-Borghini not only to mentor her, but to act as that decoy. Canyon-SRAM now as well. You have so many riders that they can use in any given situation to foil anybody's plans, to fool anybody. I think EF are still a little bit limited in that regard, and all eyes would be on Kim Kadzow in most situations now, I think, because she has nailed her colours to the mast, really. You know, she stands out. So I think for this season, you're still looking at those other teams as being the challengers for SD Works, but certainly for the seasons to come, she's an amazingly exciting talent. And I think along with Niamh Bradbury, it's exactly the kind of rider we want to see coming through, to know that no matter what happens this season, we still have something to look forward to when it comes to the development of future GC talents. Because as we keep saying, and I said this before we started recording, but we'll probably get back to Demi Vollering and her potential dominance this season. But we always ask who is going to be the rider to upset the hierarchy, you know, and there's always one rider to beat, one or two, and they're unbeatable until they're not. And we just don't know when Demi Vollering will be beaten in a stage race, and it could be at the Tour de France this year. We just don't know what's going to happen. Like I said, we'll get to that, but yeah, they're exciting talent certainly for the future, and we'll see what they can deliver this year as well.
It's so true, isn't it? Because we, you know, I was thinking when I was looking back, I was actually looking forward to, you know, Alp de Wes this year at the Tour de France Femmes. And I was kind of looking back on that Tourmalet stage that we had last year at the Tour de France Femmes. And kind of everyone was looking at the time or in the run-up to that race, looking at Annemiek van Vleuten and, you know, who can beat Annemiek van Vleuten? And, you know, she's unbeatable. And then, you know, she was quite, in the end, quite soundly beaten, actually, on the Tourmalet. And, you know, we saw such great climbing prowess from the likes of Kasia Niewiadoma and, of course, Demi Vollering, going on to win the whole thing. But, you know, that was kind of the narrative that was going on, is that Annemiek van Vleuten was, you know, unbeatable and would just be imperious at, you know, every single race she was at last year. And as you say, Ollie, you don't know when that might, you know, flip and suddenly there's a new star. But there's certainly, it's exciting, I think, to have a number of riders coming to the fore, isn't it? Because it just gives us so much more exciting racing, particularly riders that, you know, they might not necessarily be really, really young talents, but, you know, they certainly don't have the huge wealth experience that Vollering has already built up. But can anyone really take Vollering's crown, Denny, is, you know, for the Tour de France fam? Or should we be more excited about who's going to come second and third than who's going to come first?
Well, I mean, I guess just like Orla saying, you never know when Vollering's run's going to end. I guess you never know when a rider's going to make their breakthrough either. I mean, Vollering a couple of years ago wasn't the rider she is now. She had a remarkable 2023, didn't she? And now you just assume she's going to win every stage race she enters if it contains a mountain or a hill. But yeah, it isn't going to be the situation forever. So I guess we have to wait and see. I mean, I feel like there are riders that could mount a challenge. We've mentioned Nivea Doma before, and I know she was off the pace in the Tour de Suisse, but she'd had a bit of a time away from the bike. We don't quite know how riders were going into the Tour de Suisse, you know, where their form was at, how their preparation was this off the back of a big training load. So I feel like there's still a bit of time before August and the Tour de France fam before we can really make predictions. But at the moment, of course, Vollering looks head and shoulders above everyone else, doesn't she? And I should also say, Esty Works haven't lost a stage race since August 2023, the Tour of Scandinavia. So they've been unbeatable, not just in mountain stage races, but on all terrains in stage racing.
Do you know what I think is going to be really interesting, though, is if we're looking ahead to the Tour de France fam, it will be fascinating to see how SD Works' race goes at the Giro, because they're not taking Damien Vollering with them, obviously. They are taking Lotta. We know Lotta can win stage races. We also know that she has signed for another couple of years. And we know they've got lots and lots of riders within that team who can win any given bike race. But I just wonder what kind of momentum will be set in the Giro d'Italia to then take forward into the Tour de France fam, because Demi Vollering is their dominant racer right now. But within that team, more than any other team, who's top dog depends on the week, depends on the race. And so if they go into the Tour de France fam with a slightly altered view of what could be possible, let us not forget, as we keep saying, that Damien is leaving next year. If they think they may well be able to win with Damien or with AN Other, but you would not bet against them backing AN Other and then Damien having to fight a little bit more for her place within the team, fight then that much harder to win the race. We see it all the time in professional bike racing. And I just wonder whether or not actually we're thinking who will beat Demi Vollering. Will it be SD Works that ends up beating Demi Vollering because of a lack of not cohesion, but whether or not they're all going to be singing off the same hymn sheet? We just don't know. We just don't know. And I think the Giro d'Italia is going to be really interesting for the potential little storylines that it will sort of sow in the ground leading into the Tour de France fam.
We should also just say that Miss AN Other has had a quiet but fantastic season, hasn't she, at SD Works?
She's always lurking.
She's always there.
Who is this AN Other going to be, though? I mean, because Lotta Kopecky said she's going to skip the tour because her focus is on the Olympics. I'm not sure who else within the SD Works team could be as strong as Damien Vollering on a parkour like the Tour de France fam. Maybe we'll see somebody like Niamh Fisher-Black or Marlon Reusser or somebody come to the fore. Maybe you're right, Orla. Maybe we'll see in the Giro some hints of that. But so far this season, I think it has to be said, and one of the reasons, I guess, why we've talked about them quite a lot in the context of other teams kind of rising up against them, is that perhaps some of their support riders, and again, I use that term loosely, but they haven't been as strong as perhaps they were last year. It really has been mostly down to Damien Vollering, Lotta Kopecky and Lorena Vivas to win races for them this year, whereas the rest of the cast haven't been at the top of their game perhaps so far.
Well, we're talking a lot about kind of this Demi Vollering transfer that we know will happen, not sure exactly where she will go, but there are obviously a few other quite major transfers that are rumoured. We know that Elisa Longo Borghini is leaving Little Trek, which is actually huge because she's been there for so many years, kind of been such an important talismanic kind of rider for them, hasn't she? We believe that she's going to UAE, which is a big, big change. You know, obviously they have some great talents like Erica Magnaldi and Silvia Persico, but not really that kind of rider that's going to go for the win in a race like that. But it's interesting that all of these dynamics, you know, might be playing out at the races that are yet to come.
Can I just say, in a really like childish sports fan kind of way, I'm not on board with Elisa Longo-Borghini changing teams ever. She is entirely 100% Lidl Trek and always will be. And I don't like it. I like a bit of consistency in my life. And I just don't think I'll ever get used to her riding for another team. I just feel like she is the DNA of that team and sums up everything about their attacking style, how they take on races, their sense of fun. Obviously, they have a much bigger team than just Elisa Longo-Borghini. But you know what I mean? I just feel like she's a mascot as much as a team leader. And I'm going to struggle, I think, to get my head around her riding for anyone else in different colours and riding with other teammates. You know, I don't like it. It's like the band is breaking up.
I did sense a bit of that, maybe a bit of unease, though, with the team, you know, at the Tour de Suisse, because she kind of lost went down on the podium on that third stage because she didn't, you know, the team didn't do any chasing back of that breakaway who'd gone ahead. And when I saw an interview afterwards, she was kind of a bit like, well, the car told me to do it, so I did it. And, you know, sometimes she can be quite forthright anyway, but it did strike me as perhaps, you know, she felt a little bit like what she had perhaps wanted to do was a little bit stifled by the team there. But all, if you don't like the Longo-Borghini to UAE rumour, then you'll hate the Nivea Doma to SD Works rumour. That's breaking up the band even more, isn't it?
It is, but I kind of like this one. I'm contrary.
Oh.
Well, just because we all know what a talent Cassia is, right? And I feel like she's been at Canyon Tram for a lifetime and it has brought her varied success. I think her and the team could both do with a bit of freshness, to be honest. I mean,
they need
the team
a break,
itself,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think they need a break to know how much they love each other and then they can decide whether to get back. You know, this is their time apart. This is their Ross and Rachel from Friends time. You know, they're on a break. Let's see what happens. I think it'll be good for Cassia to be in a completely different training environment, to be around different teammates, to have different objectives as well. I think that's going to really push her as a bike rider. And I feel like that's maybe something that will be exciting to watch. The team themselves are bringing through, like we keep talking about, so much young talent and really, really true talent that can shine in its own right. And I'm excited to see what they'll do without Cassia as well. So I'm actually quite on board with this. I don't know, what do you think, Denny? But I think it's going to be fun to watch.
I think so, yeah. I mean, if it happens, I think it should be great for Cassia Nieva-Doma, because I think she's needed a foil quite often in the classics. Another rider that the teams think, if my teammate goes up the road, they're going to have to chase. And I don't think she's had that. And she's struggled to deal with that. You know, she's perhaps attacked at the wrong time. I mean, we remarked on how remarkably mature and patient she's ridden in races this year, but I think she'll benefit from that enormously and she'll pick up wins as a result. And as you say, Orla, they have got an amazing crop of talent coming up beneath her, and it might be quite liberating for them to think, well, actually, let's look beyond having Cassia Nieva-Doma as our leader yet again. Let's look at all the other talent we've got and try and promote them and push them forward. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to, I know we should focus on the now and the present and this year, but 2025 seems really exciting just because there is going to be this massive transfer merry-go-round. Rhianna Marcus is rumoured to go to Lidl Trek, and Pauline Ferron-Prevot is supposed to be coming back to road racing with Visma Lisa Bike. So it could be a completely different world for racing next year. And I guess we'll have to wait till August to find out whether these rumours are true, of course. But it's, as you say, it will impact on the rest of the season too, because it will change the dynamics.
I think it really does impact. And that's, you know, you're saying we're looking ahead to 2025, but we're also not, because this does influence the racing dynamics right now. And you know what? I'm always really conscious of the fact that I'm on the outside of anything, right? So we're on the outside looking into professional cycling. And I always try to temper any strong opinions, not that you'd notice it necessarily, but I try to sort of at least have that humility to know that I've got no clue really what's going on within any given team. But yet we'll always say, you know, this is bound to affect the riders, it's bound to affect the racing. And then the riders and the teams will come out and say, no, that's got nothing to do with it. You know, we just race as we always race and blah, blah, blah. And then the rider leaves the team and then all the dirt comes out. It's like, oh, yeah, I mean, obviously everything was massively affected because they, you know, I was leaving the team and they were denying me my opportunities and they weren't giving me support and blah, blah, blah. So we know that this happens in the team and within all the teams. And so all of these impending transfers, wherever they're going to end up, these riders who are leaving, all of that will impact race decisions and race strategy and race support. And I think that's the subplot that makes this part of the season really, really interesting. And I'd also say this is quite new in women's racing, whereby we are able to analyze these subplots to this extent. You know, we've done it in men's racing for a long time, but it's not really felt like it's had as much of an impact with women's racing, or maybe it's because the sport has become so much bigger, money's become so much bigger, there's more at stake. But certainly I feel like this is a more exciting narrative in this part of the season than I can remember it being in previous transfer seasons.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by MAP.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Well, of course, we've spoken a lot about SD Works winning stage races, and that was exactly the case at the Tour of Britain women, where Lottie Capecchi won. But there are so many other things going on in any race, aren't there? So that's why I've gone for a feature this month where we've got a few riders to keep some audio diaries to tell us about their own personal narratives at the Tour of Britain women. So here it is. In every bike race, there's 1,000 stories playing out at once. That's why we love it. So, for this month's feature, I've handed the mic over to 4 very different riders at the Tour of Britain Women. There's Ailey Shaw of the Alba Development Road Team, the youngest rider in the race at only 19 years old.
We're here at the Women's Tour of Britain for our first World Tour road race. We've just had breakfast and everyone seems super excited to get going and get stuck into some good racing.
There's Fifa Georgie, road captain of DSM Firmenich, who lines up as British national champion with a podium at Paris-Roubaix already under her belt this season.
I'm excited to race. But yeah, interesting to see what happens, actually, because it's a bit of a smaller field, got some really strong teams who I think can make the race really hard. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Christine Majerus, one of the best domestiques in the world, a key rider for the all-conquering SD Works Pro Time, as well as being a 2-time stage winner at the Women's Tour.
It's always nice to be back in the UK. I mean, we have had a lot of success already in this race. It's one of the races where I've always performed well. I had stage victories and finishing on GC podiums, and I'm proud on these results.
And finally, Lucy Harris of the Conti outfit, Pro Noctis 200 Degree Coffee Hargreaves Contracting, taking time off from her full-time job as a meteorological data scientist to be at her first ever World Tour race.
I remember this time last week asking my boss to have some time off to race the Tour of Britain, and I'm pretty sure that he was asking me what it was, and I said, oh, it's a cycling race, it'll be live on Eurosport, and he said, what's Eurosport?
So, on to stage one, a hilly stage which saw Lucy Harris awarded for her combativity thanks to a solo break, but in the end, an elite group broke away with Lottie Capecchi prevailing.
Stage one is done and dusted, and It was very, very tight. I don't know if it was 1 centimeter or 2, but not more. And we're coming home with a first stage win.
For the final, it was the plan to try and attack and get away. It was a bit difficult. So then, I ended up sprinting and could get third on the day, which is, still a nice result. And I think it puts me in a good position for GC.
Now time for massage, food, an early night. Need my 10 or 11 hours of sleep and then we go again.
First world tour road race ticked off too. It's just super exciting to be in such a high class of fields. And yeah, we managed to get up there and happy to come away with a 21st and yeah, 4th under 23. So overall, good day out.
Unbelievable for me. I just saw an opportunity really and I was quite near the front and I just thought, right, let's go. And I went and I looked behind and I had a bit of a gap. I thought, okay, that's cool, they're not chasing. Yeah, obviously loads of people watching at home and my parents be watching and my family. But they put it up on the big screen at work as well. So I felt a little bit like my world collided yesterday, like my colleagues got to see what I do in my spare time. Then getting to go on the podium absolutely blew my mind. I never saw that coming in a million years. And I just had a little cry, to be honest, before I went on. Once in a lifetime experience for someone like me.
On to stage two.
Of course, yesterday evening was nice. Always nice evenings where you come back from a victory. The staff also had a very well-deserved barbecue outside the British summer. No, summer or spring has been good with us, so they could enjoy it a little bit.
I'm really excited to be, yeah, again on homeish roads. I live pretty near South Wales, around Newport area, so I always used to ride around there. The kind of feel and the narrow, twisty lanes and, yeah, the kind of steep climbs is quite familiar for me. And it's, yeah, always also nice getting to wear the national champs jersey. And you know, we had a lot of schools out on the side of the road yesterday, which was really cool. Yeah, with all the kids being really excited.
It was another win for Lotta Kopecky, this time seeing a fellow escapee, Anna Henderson.
Just back at the hotel after stage two, I think everyone's plans were sort of to get in the breakaway early on. So yeah, it was quite cat and mousey for almost the full first hour, super fast. I remember looking down at the Garmin and it was, yeah, just over around 40 kilometres an hour we'd been averaging for a good wee while.
Very nice day. We had a little plan in head and kind of worked out exactly how we wanted it. And yeah, Lotta mastered that sprint perfectly. So she deserved another win. Winning also seconds in the GC, which was also a little bit the idea of all this.
Just finished massage after stage two and I'm currently lying on my bed trying to recover. Yeah, today was an interesting day for us. The climb was raced, yeah, actually pretty hard from the bottom. And yeah, Kopecky attacked, fairly near the top. And yeah, I personally just wasn't able to follow. Yeah, we were sprinting for third. But I think, yeah, we're going to look towards the sprint tomorrow with Charlotta. And then also, yeah, for the last day, trying to get back on the podium.
Yeah, came away with 29th today. Like starting to feel it a little bit, but I think lots of food and rest and recovering tonight. We should be good again to go.
Stage three then.
I think I don't give any secrets away if I say that if it's a bunch sprint, we go for Lorena. Good opportunity for us to work a little bit on our lead out towards the tour. It's always nice to try and find each other and work on it.
And indeed, Lorena Vibas did triumph in the end. But the stage was also notable for a long breakaway for Harris's teammate, Joe Tindley.
Absolutely awesome day for the team. I mean, I think we came here knowing that the chances of placing well on GC or getting a stage win was sort of vanishingly unlikely. So for a smaller team like us, it's about showing that we didn't come here to like roll around with a bunch, that we want to, you know, animate the race. And ultimately, I guess, get the sponsors on TV. And I managed to crack at it on the first day. And boy, did Joe absolutely smash it. My radio hadn't been working all day, and I knew that Joe was off the front. But I didn't really know, like, time gaps or how she was getting on or, like, who was with her or anything like that. Somewhere in the last 20K, we heard that she'd won the Combativity Award. And that's just mental. For a team like ours, be taking two trips to the podium in the Tour of Britain is just unbelievable.
Stage three wasn't the best with our teammate Danique crashing quite badly. So she went to hospital.
And then, yeah, in the final, then we were trying to set up Charlotta for the sprint, and she got second on the day. So, yeah, there was a few, like, small mistakes, I think.
That was a really cool race today. The crowds were out en masse, for sure. Two riders did get away, and then Caitlin from our team managed to bridge across on her own, which is, yeah, was amazing to watch. Things started building up for the sprint finish, and yeah, like, that's probably my favourite part. I think the excitement for me definitely comes with trying to find the right wheels at the right time, and but yeah, super happy to come away with 16th today.
And then the final stage 4, Ruby Roseman Gannon profiting from a misjudgment by Majerus. Majerus could be consoled by moving up to finish third on GC, though, behind teammate Capecchi and Henderson.
The girls wanted to help me win this stage. Yeah, unfortunately, I screwed it up a little bit. I was, I would say, too happy too early, raising my hand a few metres too early, and Ruby trumped me on the line. Feeling very bad about it, but in the end, I can laugh about it now. As long as you're not in the position where this could happen, you will always say, how is this possible? But once you're there, you're like, yeah, it's actually possible. But yeah, I mean, we won Tour of Britain. We won three stages, and we finished 1 and 3 in GC, I think, and also team classification, we win.
Ended up in fourth on GC. Which is slightly disappointing to miss the podium, but I think we tried to gain time, and we tried to go for a stage as well. So I think we can't be too disappointed with how we raced. Yeah, have had a long sleep in this morning, and yeah, I'm going to be going for an hour recovery ride just to spin the legs out.
So I've just arrived home in Oxford, pretty like overwhelmed with emotion, to be honest. I'm so proud of my entire team for what they've done. We really went through quite a lot as a small team, and it's completely bonkers to think that this time last week I wasn't even on the team. So I scrambled to get everything together, to join the team, to do this race with about a week's notice. And I'm now back in my flat in Oxford. I've just taken my chain off my bike because I waxed my chain. So after today's stage, it's need free waxing. I've got puncture to fix after puncturing on yesterday, stage 3, and I'm back to work tomorrow. So I don't know. I've got this evening to get all my laundry on, fix the puncture, wax my chain. I've got no food in the fridge. I'm going back to work tomorrow. I don't know how I'm going to sit in an office and pretend that everything's normal. Completely mental, but what an opportunity, what an experience to be a part of, to be racing alongside your heroes like that.
What an experience it's been. Just been super amazing to be able to ride alongside some of the best riders in the world. I think we've came on loads as a team this week as well. Lots of race radio practice too. We had Anna Shackley as our sort of DS, so it was amazing to have her experience talking us through each stage.
This was my last Tour of Britain. This was my last race in the UK, as this is my last season racing. I have very, very good memories racing in the UK. I love racing in the UK. I did always good results. Yeah, I always liked the atmosphere there. I liked the environment. It's a classic racing style, so that's absolutely what's a little bit my type of racing. So it was always a pleasure to come, and thanks for everyone for cheering all these years along.
So that was the feature from the Tour of Britain Women. And a big thanks to all those riders for keeping those audio diaries, because I was actually going to go myself, and then I was very ill the week before and couldn't make it up to go and do it. So thanks to them for giving us such a great insight into kind of the motivations and the day-to-day life that they have on the race. And I just loved also the comparison between some riders being disappointed to, finish on the podium, and other riders being delighted to finish 29th. It was, of course, a slightly different kind of Women's World Tour race, wasn't it, the Tour of Britain Women, because it had been cancelled, you know, sweet spot, the organisers went into liquidation, it was off the calendar, and then British Cycling picked it up and brought it back. And in that time, many of the World Tour teams had already made plans to go to other races and therefore weren't present. So we didn't have that kind of big, strong World Tour representation. But it did mean, as we heard in the feature, that there was plenty of representation from the continental riders. And they really got to shine there. And it's also just great to have the race back, isn't it, Denny? Because so often a race goes on hiatus, it doesn't come back.
Yeah, I mean, the race could so easily have not have happened ever again. So it's great to have it back. And John Dutton, the chief executive of British Cycling, told me it was 125 days from being confirmed as a UCI race to the race starting. So obviously an enormous amount of work went on behind the scenes to pull that together, because putting on a race isn't easy, especially in Britain, where the costs are huge and getting councils on board and everything else is a real challenge. And it was a really enjoyable bike race, I think, as well. I mean, as you say, there were only four World Tour teams, perhaps not the strongest lineups, but it gave a chance for some of the lesser teams to shine. All six UCI continental teams of Britain were there. I loved listening to Lucy Harris's diary entries. You know, she literally just joined Pro Noctis 200 Degrees Hercules Contracting Limited, to give them the full title.
Oh, you're a pro, Denny. You're a pro. You said limited. I didn't even have that written down.
You get brownie points if you say limited. but she literally just joined the team. That was her first race with the team, thrown into a World Tour race. I had to ask for time off to go, you know, off work to go to the race. The boss didn't even know what the Tour of Britain was. And then she's in the break in the first stage. And then she's back to work the next week. And she said in the diary, I don't know how I'm going to sit in an office and pretend everything is normal again. It's just, I love that contrast in cycling, where you can have like the stars like Lorena Vivas and Lotta Kopecky racing alongside these people that race part-time, you know, and have to go to work the next day. It's just fantastic.
It's also so vital, really, that the Tour of Britain Women managed to happen in light of the fact that the Ride London race won't be happening next year. That was recently announced because the UCI changed the dates of Ride London, shifted it back a week, and forced the organisers to have to cancel it because of the fact that, you know, obviously these events in the centre of London get organised years in advance. They obviously don't just have the Women's World Tour race. They have Sportive. They have the Free Cycle, where thousands, tens of thousands of people hit the streets of London and cycle on closed roads. So the race really had to marry up with the dates of that Free Cycle and the Sportive, and wasn't able, therefore it's not able for it to go ahead next year, which, you know, it's a shame to lose that. It's a shame to have what would have been, I think the UCI were trying that to create this kind of British cycling block almost by having a Ride London race and then having the Tour of Britain Women. But in doing that, they've in fact lost a race that has been, it's perhaps not the most thrilling race. You know, it is always sprint stages, but it's been very, it's very professional. It's very well organised, and it has been there for years, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it seems a bit crazy that they didn't even consult with the race organisers to check whether or not that space in central London was going to be free or not to move the bike race. That's a bit that annoys me, really. I just feel like we understand that a calendar has to shift around. You can't go and publish a calendar without checking with the race organisers whether or not that specific weekend is going to work or not. It very much take it or leave it. And obviously the Ride London Classic, we're like, well, we've got to leave it then, you know, which is a real, real shame. Just to briefly touch on the Tour of Britain again, though, I was absolutely flabbergasted that it came back, really, because I just felt whenever it was postponed, we all took postponed to mean cancelled. You know, these things don't come back again. If you don't get a sponsorship one year, you don't have the calling card of the previous year to be able to say, this is what we can put on, you know, give us money. And I think it's amazing that they managed to do it. And yeah, there were only four World Tour teams, but then the riders who were there were phenomenal. You know, you look at, we had Lotta Kopecky, Lorena Vivas, Charlotte Cole, Lizzie Dignan, you know, it was Anna Henderson. A really, really top-notch field, really. And it's great for the British racing scene that we had that. I want to give a quick mention to Ruby Roseman Gannon as well for taking her first ever Women's World Tour win on stage four. And in such dramatic fashion, with Christine Mazuris thinking that she had won the stage. And, you know, we're talking about the caliber of field. For Ruby Roseman Gannon to take her first win in Europe, her first Women's World Tour win, and to be ahead of Christine Mazuris in second, Lorena Vivas in third, Lotte Kopecky in fourth, I mean, you would take that, wouldn't you? So it's great to have this kind of racing that allows a rider like that to be able to shine against the top in the world at the same time. But yeah, it's a real shame for the Ride London Classic, I think. And it's a real shame for women's racing because, yeah, it might not be the most exciting if you're not a sprinter, but the sprinters need their day. And they needed that race, really, I think. So, yeah, a real shame. And I just hope that they can find a way to bring that one back again.
Yeah, it's interesting you say the sprinters need their day, because if you do look at, you know, the Giro d'Italia women, which is just around the corner, there aren't, you know, there's probably two stages that you could say were sprint stages. You know, they don't really, there's one that's a definite sprint stage, which is the second stage. And then after that, you know, the fifth stage looks like it could be a sprint, but then it could also be a breakaway. Denny, what did you make of the course of the Giro d'Italia in general, which is what it's now called? I'm desperate to call it the Giro Rosa, desperate, because it's always been called the Giro Rosa to me, or the Giro Donne, but the Giro d'Italia, the women's Giro d'Italia.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can I just also make a point about the Ride London before we do that? Because I think I just find it enormously depressing, and because it's so, so, so difficult to put on UCI races in Great Britain at the moment. The costs have risen exponentially. It's difficult getting attracting teams because of Brexit. It's difficult because councils have no funding. And yet here we had Ride London, which was, okay, you might not think the racing is thrilling, but it was as stable as you're going to get in the UK. It had a partnership until 2026 with Essex County Council. The GLA, the authority in London, were on board. It attracted a lot of fans. I know it kind of engaged a lot of kind of local teams and clubs. It was great for cycling in Great Britain. And for the UCI, I mean, they did respond, I think, to Ride London's statement that there was no consultation, said they had been engaged. But it felt like they were quite dismissive of Ride London. Surely, as you said, Ola, they should have checked whether it was possible to move dates. And clearly, they either did and found out it wasn't and did it anyway, meaning they didn't care, or they didn't check, which was just careless. So I just think it just looks really bad, given how difficult it is to put on races, for the UCI to do that. Maybe, as you say, this is some gambit. Maybe the two parties will talk and common sense will prevail. But I just find it really, really, really disappointing.
I think Ride London actually said even that they had kind of appealed it and said to the UCI, well, maybe we can just have, you know, two World Tour events, you know, make an exception, have two World Tour events on the same weekend. And the UCI came back and said no. That's what the Ride London organisers said. But when it's so hard to cling on to these races, it's crazy to kind of willingly let one just disappear. And then, you know, it is like we were saying earlier around the Tour of Britain women, you know, how does that then come back? Then, you know, what, you know, is that just then gone forever now? And that just out of some kind of bureaucracy, effectively.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
But yes, Denny, we should talk about a race that does exist. You know, what do you make of the Giro d'Italia that is coming up very shortly?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they've taken a leaf out of the Tour de France fam road book, in the sense that it's a course that is very much backloaded, as we've seen with the Tour de France fam routes. Obviously, we've got a new organizer now in RCS, and I think there was a lot of hope that we'll see a better organized race, one that has better coverage. I mean, the Giro's often suffered because it clashes with the men's Tour de France and kind of gets swamped in that black hole of publicity. But that's a terrible term anyway, but you know what I mean. It just gets kind of shuttered out because of all the publicity of the Tour de France. But I think hopefully this time the coverage should be a bit better. The RCS recently covered the Giro Next Gen, which is the under 23 men's Giro. And the coverage there was excellent on social media. Lots of video clips and very professionally done. So I think that bodes well. The course is, as you say, only has a couple of stages for sprinters, plenty of hills, as you'd expect. And of course, stage 7 is the queen stage, features the blockhouse climb, goes up to 1,680 meters. And I guess that's probably where the GC will be decided. So it really will be a case of waiting until the very end of the race to see how the GC race shapes up.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it is kind of a little bit similar to a men's Giro d'Italia, where it kind of starts quite sort of, you know, quiet, and you know, there's a short time trial and there's a sprint, and then it kind of builds. But it's difficult, isn't it, in women's racing when you have stage 7, which is this blockhouse stage, which is so big, and you think the time gaps could be massive on there, potentially, maybe not without, you know, Vollering being there, perhaps it will be a slightly more even field, but they could be a huge time gaps there that perhaps the riders will be looking to get the GC competition started a bit earlier, because, you know, you do have those earlier hilly stages, earlier kind of classics type stages, like stage 6 is pretty punchy, and then stage 3 is kind of a smaller climb to the finish. But, you know, the GC riders aren't going to be really wanting to wait to see how they feel on that one day on stage 7, are they, all? Are they going to be kind of wanting to see what seconds they can pinch or before that? Or maybe they won't. Maybe they'll have to feel like they have to save their energy for, you know, what will be a huge, huge effort on stage 7.
It's really hard to know, isn't it? And I keep changing my mind even as you're talking, Rose, and I'm fully convinced of one opinion.
Well, you could hear I was as well.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, obviously, the blockhouse is such a monster. It is such a beast. And what sometimes happens, obviously, with stage races is that if we have a queen stage like that, it can neutralise the racing before we get there. But my gut is that I don't think they... I think the field should be fairly evenly split when it comes to the top end of the climbers. We don't have one dominant rider like a Dainey, like an Annemiek last year. And I feel like the riders and the teams have to just race this from the off or as close to the off as they can, because otherwise, what's the point? And I say that really flippantly because I don't have to race blockhouse on stage 7.
Yeah.
Obviously, the point is you need another one the tank to get up to the top of the blooming mountain. But I think it's the field will make it really interesting. And this is one thing that I think cycling teaches us all the time. We can look at parkour and say it's going to be raced like this and it's going to be raced like that. It is not raced any way other than how the field of riders in any given day decide they're going to take it on. And it's up to them how dynamic or not they're going to make it. Which sounds obvious, I think, but I say that because we can pick apart a course and decide that this is what it lends itself to in terms of racing, and then the riders will decide something different. But this is the first time that we're going to have a rider winning the equivalent of the Giro d'Italia who is not Annemiek van Vleuten or Anna van der Breggen in 8 years. So we're going to have a brand new winner in almost a decade. And that in itself, I think, is really exciting. And you would think, you know, you're getting on the team buses at the start line before that time trial. And that's the kind of vibe that you're sending out to your GC hopefuls and saying, you know what, we can make history here. We can do something that's not been done in almost a decade and have a brand new winner of this race. And obviously it's a new race anyway to an extent because of RCS taking it over. But, you know, if I were the sports director, mercifully for all professional riders, I am not. But I think it'd be good at the cheerleading bit, you know, and that's certainly what I would be using to incentivize the riders, is that this is going to be such a wide open field because there is no Demi, and Lotte Kopecky will be there, but she can't climb yet like Jamie Vollering can. And so when it gets to the blockhouse, it could be quite an equalizer, really, rather than the climb where one person shines. It could be the climb that kills all the legs, you know, so you've got to make sure that you're doing damage before then, I would think.
Yeah, that is the trend that we've seen in women cycling in the past few years, is that, you know, when you get to this huge kind of alpine pass or, you know, huge climb in the Dolomites, that one rider kind of goes way ahead, and then kind of your second, third, fourth, fifth, they kind of then have to battle it out amongst themselves. And there's a little bit more, you know, obviously it's always enthralling to see, you know, one athlete come out on top and just put in such a strong, imperious kind of performance. But then, we kind of lack that sort of excitement going right to the line on these huge climbs of who is going to take, you know, the queen stage. And so, like you said, Orla, it's kind of like taking out, not having that top rider that is the out and out, champion or someone who has won it before, we might see coming to the line in Blockhouse, you know, a smaller group of riders, or, you know, two riders or three riders trying to play a bit more kind of cat and mouse, which should change the whole race dynamics. I think we got a kind of a clue about that, didn't we, on the Tourmalet last year, that though it did kind of end up being spread out right at the end, but we did see almost all the way up the Tourmalet, we had this little group with Lotte Kopecky still hanging in on the Tourmalet. And I should say, actually, that this Blockhouse stage, the climbing on the final climb was going to be more than climbing up to the Tourmalet, although the altitude is much, much greater on the Tourmalet. But, you know, that gives a bit of perspective on what kind of a feat and what kind of a challenge awaits the riders at the Giro. But yeah, we should see some, excitement and some names. We obviously mentioned a few names, Denny, haven't we already, about who might come to the fore at this race, like Neve Bradbury. We think that, you know, she might be there. We also think that, you know, Antonia Niedermayer will be at the Canyon SRAM as well. So if that is the case, they'll be extremely strong. But who else can you see, Denny, kind of coming to the fore?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't know the full provisional start list yet, but on paper, I think we might see Canyon SRAM and Lidl-Trek being the strongest teams potentially. I'm not sure who SD Works are going to field. Obviously, Orla, you said Lotte Kopecky is due to ride, and we won't know whether she'll be using that to race. I mean, she loves to race, doesn't she? But she's got the Olympics around the corner, so she'll have that at the back of her mind as well, obviously, where she'll be focusing on the track. So that opens the door, doesn't it, to teams like Lidl-Trek and Canyon-SRAM to kind of mount a GC challenge. And you mentioned Bradbury, Niedermayer. Shabby looked great at the Tour de Suisse as well, very aggressive. And then Lidl-Trek looks like they'll field both Lungo Borghini and Gaia Realini. So again, that dynamic has been fascinating. You hinted at it earlier, Rose, but it feels like Lidl-Trek are trying to push Realini as their kind of new GC rider, but it hasn't quite worked out. And what it's felt like to me, and again, we don't know because we're from the outside, is that in the end, Lungo Borghini has been the more consistent rider through a stage race. And so she's ended up having to take on the leadership mantle, even though they wanted Realini to be the outright leader. So that will be a fascinating dynamic in itself, I think, within that team. And then you've got riders like Kim Kadzo, who we've mentioned already. And I'm interested to see how the Movistar team does, because Liana Lippert's had a difficult start to the season, but she's come back recently. I know she's been touted as a replacement for Van Vleuten, and she's said, well, I'm not Van Vleuten, I'm not that kind of rider. But on the other hand, there are plenty of stages for a rider like her, you know, classics type stages, hilly stages, where we could see her coming back to form as well.
And we haven't spoken about FDJ at all. We don't really know who they're fielding, but apparently Cecily Ludwig and Marta Cavalli, that's what's been rumoured, will be lining up there. You know, again, more another strong team in terms of climbing.
I think they should be really strong, actually. And it's a great chance for Cecily at Triplebig as well, in the absence of Jamie Vollering, which, again, whenever you've got a rider who knows that they stand a good chance because the field has changed or whatever, it makes the racing more exciting. You know, you ride differently if you're going to be taking on a Jamie Vollering, or if you think, now I've got a real chance of winning this outright and I could be and should be one of the favourites. But Denny, you had said that we haven't seen SD Works not win a stage race since August of last year. And I think this will be it. You know, this will be the chance for other teams to take their grand tour. And we did this thing for Eurosport. I think it was before the Giro d'Italia, where we had to predict who was going to win each bike race. And we didn't even know, and we still don't know, who's going to be riding the Giro. Sorry, before the men's Giro d'Italia, obviously. We didn't know who would be riding the women's Giro. But back then, I predicted Elisa Longo Borghini, not knowing if she's going to ride or not. And I'm going to stick with that. I still fancy her chances because of everything that we're saying. And also, I do feel like they will give it a good shot of backing Gaia Raylini, but Elisa Longo Borghini is just a class apart. And I would, how amazing. I'm sorry. That's almost Cassia Nebbiadoma levels of excitement for me. Imagine Elisa winning the Giro. I mean, don't talk to me for weeks, please.
Well, you won't be back on for months after that, Orla. No, that's another.
Pick me off the floor whenever you're ready. Yeah, move me until then.
No, but she is also one of the few riders that's actually beaten Demi Vollering. I mean, obviously that was in Brabant's Appeal, which feels like a long, long time ago, but she kind of out-sprinted Demi Vollering there. So, you know, she obviously has that pedigree. But like you say, Orla, you know, when the racers feel like they can't beat the likes of Vollering, and they kind of beat, they've got to then race to beat the other riders instead of looking to go for the win. It could be hugely different. But Denny, looking at the other end of the spectrum of the riders, your favourite team, the Tashkent City team, will be lining up, of course, because they take one of those spots from last year. We kind of spoke a bit about it at the end of last year. How are you fancying their chances?
Should we dish out the hard hats now, Denny, or after you finish?
Well, yeah, I'm most interested in Orla's take on this one, of course.
I did nothing but this time around. Got myself into trouble before.
But of course, they topped the rankings, didn't they? The UCI rankings last year. To get these guaranteed wildcard spots in the World Tour. And it didn't go well for them in the Tour de Suisse. I think it's fair to say none of their riders finished the race. They had five riders over the time limit, and one, Zabelinskaya, was disqualified for holding on to the team car. And there has been dismay as expressed, I think, to put it kindly, on social media about that performance and what that might mean for the Giro and for the Tour de France fan, which they're due to ride. I know that Dan Challis, who follows that team very closely, a journalist, has said that the coach has said they had a weakened team. Two of their strong riders, Kuskova and Karamova, were injured and there were other issues. But it really doesn't bode well when a team can't finish a race because of issues like being over the time limit or being disqualified because you're holding onto cars. That screams that they're not good enough to be there. I mean, you might say there might be mitigating circumstances. Vollering's performance in that time trial, by the way, was so good that it meant that I think several riders were actually over the time limit on the time trial alone, weren't they? But it doesn't bode well. And when you think that teams like Co-op, Team Coop, Repsol and Life Plus Wahoo and others didn't get a wildcard place or place on the Tour de France fam, having animated the race last year, I'm sure they'll be looking at Tashkent's performance at the Tour de Suisse thinking, you know what they'll be thinking, and I won't say it out loud.
very nicely skipped over, Denny.
Guys, just as we are recording, something's popped up on my iPad, which anyone listening will probably be aware of by now, but we didn't know when we started recording. Katie Archibald is out of the Paris Olympics. And like I say, anyone who's listening probably knows this already, but I know Rose and Denny, you don't. She tripped in the garden and broke her lower leg. So she's put on her Instagram that she tripped over a step in the garden and managed to dislocate her ankle. She's broken her tibia, her fibula, and ripped two ligaments off the bone. She was going for her third Olympic Games and had huge hopes. I know she had huge hopes of a phenomenal Olympic Games. She was planning to be at camp in a few weeks' time and go straight from there to the Paris Games. I want to cry. I'm so heartbroken for her. This is so hard, isn't it? Like, elite sport is so hard. She's such a phenomenal rider. She's such a phenomenal ambassador. She has given everything to this sport. She has been through the worst ringers that life can shove you through, with cycling being her anchor. Oi, that's hard, isn't it? That's hard.
That's absolutely awful. And it does show you how fickle this sport is, you know, that you can be in the absolute prime condition. You can be the top. People are all looking to her as the favourite to get through so much, on a personal level, and to be ready and heading for the start line, and something so innocuous can just absolutely put paid to that. Of course, we send all our love to Katie Archibald.
Absolutely.
You know, it's going to be a hard road to recovery now, isn't it? But yeah, such an upset, and such a bright, and as you say, Orla, such a great ambassador for the sport, and someone who, you know, really has brought so many people into it and engages people in the sport. So it's going to be, I mean, a shame. Well, such a huge disappointment, shame. I mean, that doesn't even do it justice, does it, for her? No. But I mean, for everyone watching, even it's going to be a huge shame to watch the Olympics and not have her competing there.
It's awful. It's that thing with sport, isn't it? The could have, would have, should have. She should have been there. She should be there winning gold medals, and this being everything that sealed the last couple of years for her, and, you know, putting a ribbon on her Olympic career. Not to say that she was going to retire or anything, but, you know, this is her third cycle now. She would have been one of the senior figures in that team. And I hope anybody listening can forgive if it sounds like there's any British bias here. It's more that, you know, we kind of know Katie, and on a human level, sport, life, it's just so unfair sometimes, isn't it? It's so unfair. So, yeah, sending all of our love, all of our best wishes, all of our strength for what it's bloody worth, which is nothing, obviously, but all the same, we send it to Katie, because this is going to be a really rubbish time for her. Rubbish, but there we go.
Yeah, we're absolutely with her, and absolutely, you know, kind of double, both me and Denny would, of course, double up on your sentiment, Orla. But we hope, you know, we hope we can see her back in the future. I mean, that's the only thing we can take from it is, you know, she has been through so much, as you said, and has come back so many times. We can only hope that she can bounce back once again. But well, that's actually that bombshell is going to close off our episode today. We're not going to be back until after the Giro d'Italia. So all of those little predictions, or I think we all kind of stayed enough on the fence there that we'll kind of ride that storm quite well. We've done this enough times.
I put a name to it, Elisa Longo-Borghini.
Oh, you did, Elisa Longo-Borghini. Okay. Well, I'll let Denny off, unless you know, you really want to hold yourself
Come
up.
Come on, Denny. All or nothing. Go for glory.
Crikey, we don't even know the start list.
No glory. What is it? No glory. No what? What is? I don't know what. I don't know what saying. So I'll just pick one.
I'm gonna back Niamh Bradbury.
Oh,
then.
Nice.
Because
nice.
Let's all go different. I was trying to get in there before Denny said it, just in case.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to say Niamh Bradbury. I'd love missing any opportunity to pick her up. So I was going to skip her. Yeah. I'm going to say...
What's your win line? What's Denny week?
Yeah. I'll go for Guy Raiolini.
I like that. Interesting.
Trying to shine at last. I can see
okay,
so
inter-team actually. Rivalry, Denny. I see what you're doing.
I like that.
I see what you're doing here. Okay, I got your number.
Very much like the dynamic on this podcast.
Absolutely.
Ever since that Christmas quiz, it's never been quite the same, has it? Well, thank you very much to both of you for joining me. Denny, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Orla, thank you. We shall see, won't we, who wins out at the Giro d'Italia.
Certainly will. Thank you so much for having me, guys. Have a good one.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.